Many years ago, I was living in Missouri, and I had an opportunity to take a trip. With the business and the company I was working for, I had to have a special meeting with a group down in White House, Texas. And White House is just outside Tyler. And I thought, this is going to be a great opportunity. I want to drive through and see the old Big Sandy campus. This was probably around 2003. And I thought, well, I'm going to take my son with me because I want to show my son the campus. I had seen the campus just a few years prior, and the campus was overgrown. There was very few people on it. In fact, a couple years prior when I had driven through, we drove through the entire campus and saw three people in the entire Big Sandy campus. That was my home for 2 years as I went to Ambassador College there, so that was a disappointment. But at this point now, when I was down visiting with this group and taking a trip through, it was under the ownership of the Hobby Lobby Corporation. And they are the ones who bought the Ambassador College campus in Texas. The grounds were in better shape. A lot of buildings were still unoccupied. But driving through there, even though it was cleaned up and they had done a better job of taking care of it, much like many of you, if you've gone and visited Ambassador College campus here in Pasadena, you say, it's still pretty, but it just doesn't have the same spirit. There's a different feel there, and of course, driving through there, we felt that. The corporation had changed the golf course into a public golf course. Of course, it was a small golf course at that time. But the campus, again, was cleared out. At that time, about half of Booth City was gone. Now, when I worked at the campus, I worked in construction, and I remodeled every single booth in Booth City. So I had been in every single one of those, remodeling, taking out all the old insulation and paneling and putting all new paneling and insulation up. And I lived in one of those booths for 2 years. Now, when you drive through Texas, you see those booths all over in people's backyards as sheds. They were sheds when I lived in it, too, but they were cleaned up a little bit and had an air conditioner. So it was a little home for 2 years. But you see them all over in Texas. What I found interesting is as I met with these clients, and it was a business call that I was down there for, I met with these individuals, and the owner of this particular restaurant, when I told him I was from Ambassador College, he said, oh, I know where that college is. He told me about the new owners. He quickly popped up, and he said, well, the owner of that new property tithes on everything he makes. And they are a religious corporation, but I found that interesting. He knew about tithing, and so he said he tithes on everything he makes. The other gentleman sitting there was a restaurant franchisor for a fast food Mexican chain. And he said, well, if you want to be successful in business, you have to. And it's almost surreal sitting with individuals in the world talking about tithing going, no, you have to tithe. You have to do that to be successful in life and in business. It's interesting to see others talk about tithing in the same way that we do. Does tithing help one to be successful? And does following God's principles of money management and obeying God's laws help us to prosper? These individuals looked at it that way, and they said, well, if you want to be successful, if you want to have a thriving business, you have to tithe. Now, the church for many years and the college did tithe, and the church tithes today, as many individuals still continue to tithe. And there are laws in force. Just as God puts laws in the universe, laws that continue to work, and that if those laws were to stop for any reason, such as the laws that maintain the universe, maintain the orbit of the planets, life would cease to exist because things just would not operate in a way that it does. But those are physical laws, but God also set in force spiritual laws. He set in force laws that were long before they were given to the children of Israel, and including tithing. Today, I want to look at the laws of tithing and how it affects our lives, even in today's society. Because tithing hasn't changed, and the law of tithing hasn't changed. People have changed, and the way individuals look at tithing has changed. But it is still a law that is very much in effect. I've listened to countless motivational speakers over the years, being in sales for over 20 years, and listening to sales professionals, listening to motivational speakers who talk about tithing and how they tithe, and I found it very interesting. I want to name just a few famous tithers. I don't think any of us make the list of famous tithers, but J.D. Rockefeller, and for younger people, they may go, still don't know who that is. For those of us who are a little bit older, he was considered the wealthiest man in the United States at that time. But J.D. Rockefeller said, "I would never have been able to tithe on the first $1 million I ever made if I had not tithed on my first salary, which was $1.50 a week." Now, the teens could pick that up, and they go, wow, $1.50 a week. Inflation was different. Things were different in the country at that time. We have a lot of inflation that has affected how much money that would be. But it wasn't even a lot then. So he tithed on $1.50 a week, long before he made his millions. From angelfire.com, it talks about his grandson. It says, David Rockefeller, at age 7, had received an allowance of 50 cents per week. 10%, or 5 cents, belonged to the Lord and was his tithe, as he had saved this 10%. He said, "Our parents made us feel from an early age that we had to contribute and not just take." So what J.D. Rockefeller had done had passed on to his son, who had passed it on to his grandson, and they continued to tithe. But they said they want to contribute and not just take. And again, sometimes that is the view of those who are tithing in the world. Now, I want to contribute, I want to do my part, but really not understanding what tithing is. J.L. Kraft, head of the Kraft Corporation, a Kraft Cheese Corporation, who had given approximately 25% of his enormous income to Christian causes for many years, said, "The only investment I ever made that has paid consistent dividends, consistently increasing dividends, is the money that I had given to the Lord." J.L. Kraft is known for being a tither. So did God bless their tithing even though they were not a part of the church, that they didn't have their calling and opening up their minds to particular things? And if so, was it just chance that they were fortunate in business and that it had nothing to do with tithing? God doesn't state in his command to tithe that tithing is only for those in the church. It is a command, and we'll understand that it's not just a command to do something financial. His command in tithing is relationship-based. It is to have a relationship with him. It is to develop a closer relationship, just as the commandments, the Ten Commandments. But it is to develop a relationship. You wouldn't be able to tell these men who made their millions and tithed on it that this was just by chance. It didn't. That's not what affected their life, because they say, "This is what it has done for me." And just as the two individuals I met in Texas, well, if you want to be successful, you have to. Well, chance or not, they gave their credit to tithing. I want to look at a story, and I'm not sure of the story's authenticity, but the article is entitled "Jacob's Pledge." It talks about one other individual that I want to mention who was a tither. It said, when candy manufacturer John S. Hulier, H-U-Y-L-E-R, started out in business, he took Jacob's Pledge. Now, if you're not familiar with Jacob's Pledge, it's taken from Genesis 28. "Of all that you shall give me, I will surely give the tenth unto you." So he took this pledge that to God, "Of all that you give me, I will give you a tenth." I looked up this individual because I thought, well, if he's a candy manufacturer and was considered wealthy in the nation, I'm still not familiar with the name of Hulier. But he was from New York, and it said at the time of his death, there were 54 stores across the United States supplied by 14 candy factories employing 2,000 people. Pretty good sized candy store that covered the entire United States. He says, going to the bank, he opened a special account which he initialed MP. Into that fund, he regularly entered proportionate amounts of his income. When anyone would ask him what the strange label meant, they were told that it stood for "my partner." He considered God his partner in business. As he kept God the utmost in his mind in all his transactions, his industry grew at a phenomenal rate, and each week the Lord's treasury of the church received increasingly large sums. His gift to worthy causes and private individuals amazed his business associates, and these contributions were always accompanied with a request that the donor not receive any thanks or glory for his actions. He asked the recipients to offer praise to God alone, for he said, after all, the money isn't mine, it's the Lord's. Now this is an individual who understood tithing, that it's not his to begin with, that all things belong to God. And God says, I require 10% of your increase back. Let's look at Genesis chapter 28 and verse 22. Genesis 28 and verse 22, where Jacob makes this pledge. Genesis 28 and verse 22. This stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house, and of all that you shall give me, I will surely give the tenth unto you. Now he doesn't say a tenth, he says the tenth, the 10%, the first fruits. He said, I will give the tenth unto you. So this wasn't just an ordinance at Mount Sinai, it just wasn't something that God gave to Moses or that Moses passed along to the children of Israel. This is something that had been ordained long before that. One of the motivational speakers I used to listen to was Jim Rohn. And he talked about budgeting. And he was talking about how we manage what we have, what we've been given. Almost like the parable of the pounds. He said, individuals would come to him and said, well, if I had a lot of money, I would budget better, but I don't have very much, so it doesn't matter. And he said, if you can't manage and budget what is little, you'll never budget and manage what is big. And again, we can't have the attitude, well, there's not going to be enough, or I don't make enough to make a difference. We have to manage what we have. And J.D. Rockefeller tithed on $1.50 per week before he made millions. God tells us in Deuteronomy 30, verse 19, he said, I call heaven and earth to record this day against you that I've set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. He said, therefore, choose life that both you and your seed may live. He said, he's given us choices, and tithing is a choice. He says, if you tithe, you're going to be blessed. If you follow that way of life, you're going to be blessed. If you don't, just as if you don't keep the commandments, then there are curses that come along with it. He gives instructions, but he gives us the choice. He said, if we live the way he wants us to live, we're going to be blessed for it. If we don't, there's cursing. So there's the law of blessing and cursings. He said, here's one way of life. Here's the results. And if you follow that, that's going to be the result that you obtain. If you don't, there are all other results as well. But he gives us the choice. Now he says, choose life. I want you to have the blessings. I want you to have what's right, what's good. But he tells us to choose. So God tells us everything belongs to him, but he says a tenth of the land and what it produces is his and is holy. It's not just that he commands that we tithe, but he says what you set aside as a tenth or the tenth is holy. Let's go back a little bit further in Genesis to Genesis chapter 14, and we'll look at the first place that tithing is mentioned. Genesis chapter 14 and in verse 18. This is where Abram is tithing to Melchizedek. Genesis 14, verse 18. Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him, and he said, blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And he blessed, and blessed, be the Most High God, which has delivered enemies into your hand. And he gave him tithes of all. Abram tithed to Melchizedek. The king of Sodom said to Abram, give me the persons and take the goods to yourself. And Abram said to the king of Sodom, I have lifted up my hands unto the Lord and to the Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. Again, recognizing you possess, you own heaven and earth. You own it all. But it said he gave tithes of all. Hebrews tells us that the things that we read about in the Old Testament are examples. And we realize that this is an example of Abram tithing. We saw the example of Jacob's pledge, that he was tithing as well. But these are given to us as examples. And even the law of tithing itself is an example that we are to keep. In the New Testament, Christ talked about tithing. He didn't say it was done away with. But in Matthew 23, verse 23, which is a memory verse, we call it the weightier matters of the law, it says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees and hypocrites, you pay tithe of mint, anise, and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith." So he said, they were sitting there going through their spices, and you can just picture them with a pile of spices, and they're taking a little metal rod and scooting over 10%, trying to get exactly 10% of little tiny spices. He said, "These ought you to have done, and not leave the other undone." He said, you don't leave judgment, mercy, and faith undone. But he told them, you should be tithing. These ought you to have done. And so we understand that the tithing principle is not something that ended. Christ talked about it, and he said, yes, you should be tithing. But these individuals were missing out on other factors. But the point is, that it was not to be left undone. So looking at the fundamentals of tithing, how do we know what to tithe on? And how many tithes are there? Does the church still believe in a third tithe? We get that question from time to time, and we get that in personal correspondence. Does the church still believe in third tithe? Start off with first tithe. In first tithe, we're going to look at the questions of why we should tithe, how much we should tithe, what we tithe on, and who we tithe to. The tithing principle is still there, and it is still in effect. And those who understand it and follow the laws of tithing realize it's not just a money thing. It's not just taking aside 10% of your increase or your income and sending it into the church. It is relationship-based, and there's a bond that is built between us and God the Father. Let's go to Psalm chapter 24. Psalm 24 and verse 1. Psalm 24 and verse 1, David says, "The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof." He said it all belongs to God, the world and they that dwell therein. He says everything, including the people on the earth, those that dwell there, belong to God. "For he has founded it upon the seas and has established it on the floods." Everything belongs to God. And when you start off with that premise, it's not, can I afford to give 10% back? It's, it belongs to God to begin with. He asked for 10% of my increase. That's where I'm going to do it immediately. We understand that it all belongs to Him. And when we understand that concept, tithing makes more sense. So when we ask ourselves, why should we tithe? Because God commands that we tithe. And it's not just, okay, I've given them some laws that deal with relationships. I've given them laws that deal with a relationship with me. Now I'm just going to give them a financial law because I don't have any financial laws. I need to throw some financial laws in there. No, this is a relationship-based law as well. So he tells us that we are to tithe. Everything is his, including that tithe. And he said it is holy. So of everything he gives us, he only requires a tithe of the increase back. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 9. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 9. And we see in this verse that it is relationship based. He says, "Honor the Lord with your substance and with the first fruits of your increase." He said, you honor God. Not just that you obey Him, but you're honoring Him. Just as with second tithe, and we'll get into that, but in second tithe, He says, you learn to fear the Lord your God, and you shall surely rejoice, and I'm going to bless you. But it's a relationship based. Here He says, honor the Lord with your substance, with the first fruits of your increase. And notice what He says, so shall your barns be filled with plenty, and your presses shall burst out with new wine. Again, a command, but there's blessings that follow it. The word substance here is hone and means, or wealth and riches. So he said, honor the Lord with your wealth. Honor the Lord with your riches, with your the things that you have or things that you've obtained. You honor him with those and with the first fruits of your increase. And then he says that you're going to be blessed because of it. It's cause and effect. Do we believe in that promise? Because that is a promise. He said, honor the Lord and, or so, you will be, your barns will be filled with plenty and your presses are going to burst out with new wine. Now some have said, well, I tried tithing and I never got rich. If that's the purpose behind tithing, you probably never will get rich. And you may never get rich even if you tithe the rest of your life. But if getting rich is your purpose, there's something missing in the understanding of the tithe itself. But do we believe in this promise that God says, you are going to be blessed for it? How do we honor God with our substance, and how do we give God the first fruits of our increase? May have mentioned this here before. I know I have in Bakersfield. The example of a boy who's given two coins, and his dad gave him two coins, and he said, one of these is for an offering. He said, I want you to go to church, and you give it to God. The boy's on his way to church, and he says, how do I give money to God? He goes, I'll just throw it up in the air. Whatever God wants, he can keep. Whatever comes back down is mine. Now, that's human reasoning, especially for a little boy. But for all of us as individuals, the mentality is just like the Pharisees who were going through the little herbs, picking through what is 10%. Individuals try to come up with human reasoning of, well, I don't have to pay it this month, or I shouldn't have to pay it, or this doesn't count as increase, and come up with different ways of not paying tithes. But we honor God by giving him 10% of our increase. And it's a choice. We're not forced to do it. If we don't, there's going to be penalties, but he doesn't force us. But it develops us, it gives us the ability, and lays out a way of having a relationship with God. And through tithing, hopefully your relationship with God continues to grow. Many who stopped tithing years ago within the splits of the church made various comments that were shocking to me, especially just coming out of my teenage years and as a young adult. Individuals that had been in the church 40 years, and I looked at them as pillars in the church, and they said, well, I never liked tithing anyway. It was too hard to tithe. And I thought, 40 years and you never liked tithing anyway. You didn't develop anything or any relationship with God over 40 years, and then it was quickly thrown out. Others stated, and you may have heard this, it was more familiarly used, I'm glad we have a choice now. And they stopped tithing. We've always had a choice, and we still have a choice. And it wasn't a matter of now you have a choice, it's presented to you. God says, you have a choice. I've said before you two choices. You choose. And we choose whether or not we're going to obey God. But we've always had that choice. But it speaks volumes about a person's relationship when they say, I never liked it anyway, or I never understood why we had to tithe. There's something missing there. And again, from time to time, and it's been a while since I covered tithing, I think it's good that we go back and look at tithing itself and how important it is, not just financially, but from a relationship base of our relationship and commitment to God. God says he loves a cheerful giver. That talks about attitude. Talks about a relationship. Not just I love givers because now I'm increasing and I have the money that I want. God has everything. He's not looking for money. He loves a cheerful giver. The attitude that is behind it. Now, who should tithe? I talked about individuals who were wealthy, like J.D. Rockefeller, and others who were wealthy in business who tithed. Is tithing limited to the church, or is tithing limited to the people of God? Read examples of those who were blessed for tithing, and again, it wasn't coincidence. They realized that their blessings came from following a certain law or certain principle. I've had individuals tell me, well, tithing was based on an agrarian or agrarian culture or society, and only farmers today are supposed to tithe. Well, I said, well, then probably not many people would want to be farmers. If you're a farmer, you have to pay 10% to the church. People would find different professions. It's not just for an agricultural society. It is for everyone. God says he owns the earth. He owns everyone who belongs on the earth. And his command to tithe is not just for the church. It's not just for the people of God. Israel was to be a model nation. They were to be an example. We read in Deuteronomy chapter 28, verses 1 through 13, about how Israel was to be a lead nation. They were to set the example for the other nations around them. And in fact, he says, God will set you on high above all the nations of the earth. He said, I want to set you up, and I want individuals to look at you and understand why you're blessed, why you're living the way you are, and that there's rewards for living God's way of life, and that you are God's people as an example. And it was for the other nations as well. And when we obey God and we follow God, he blesses us for it. And he tells us it's a promise. I want to bless you. Let's go to the New Testament. Romans chapter 2. Romans chapter 2 and verse 6. Romans chapter 2 and verse 6. He says, who will render to every man according to his deeds? The choices we make, the decisions we make, he's going to render it to every man according to his deeds. To them who by patient continuance in well-doing seek for glory and honor and immortality, eternal life. But to those who are contentious and do not obey the truth, but obey unrighteousness, indignation and wrath, tribulation and anguish upon every soul of man that does evil, of the Jew first and also to the Gentile. He said it doesn't matter whether you're Jew or Gentile, whether you're in the church or not in the church. He said God's going to render to every man according to his deeds. You're responsible for everything you do. And we see those choices of cause and effect. Verse 10, but glory, honor, and peace to everyone or every man that works good, to the Jew first and also to the Gentile. For there is no respect of persons with God. If you have somebody who is obeying the laws of God, whether they understand them or not, are they going to be blessed for it? Well, we have laws of nature. And sometimes people automatically have a sense of the laws of nature. If you don't understand gravity and how gravity works, you still are pretty careful when you get up on something tall, because you realize the law of gravity is going to pull you down to the earth very quickly. You jump off a building or off the top of a roof, and as boys, we always did that. We thought we could jump off of roofs. We thought we could do all these things, and this is what scares parents. But you find out the law of gravity is in force. Now, you follow that law, and you keep that law. Whether you understand the law of gravity perfectly or not, if you keep yourself from breaking the law of gravity, not getting away from the law of gravity, but from allowing it to cause harm, then it will bring a blessing. So here he said, there's no respecter of God, or no respect of persons with God. So he said, you're going to be blessed if you do what's good, and you're going to suffer the consequences of other choices if you choose to do what is wrong. Verse 12, for as many as have sinned without the law, they shall also perish without the law. And as many as have sinned in the law shall be judged of the law. If you know the law, you're going to be judged by it. If you don't know the law, it says, as many have sinned without the law, they're going to perish without the law. The penalty is still there. For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law shall be justified. For when the Gentiles, which have not the law, do by nature the things contained in the law. They didn't have the law. They didn't understand the laws of God. They weren't following or had not had them taught to them to follow. But he said, when they do by nature things contained in the law, they respect their parents. They avoid adultery. They don't steal from others. There are people in the world who don't know God's truth and don't know the laws of God, but basically what we call good people by nature. When they do the things of nature contained in the law, these having not the law are a law to themselves. They're keeping it, and so they're going to enjoy the rewards of keeping law, whether they understand it fully or not. Now, it's not saying they kept all the laws and they kept them perfectly and God blessed them for being righteous, because he said there's none righteous, no, not one. But he's talking about those who understand that there's natural things, and by nature, if they're keeping the laws of God, they're going to be blessed for it. And by nature, just as we've seen, individuals who understand there is a law of tithing, and if I follow that law of tithing, there's going to be a blessing that comes from it. So if we keep the laws of God naturally, we'll be blessed in some way for keeping that law. Just as if we break the laws of God, knowingly or unknowingly, we pay a penalty, sometimes more than one, because sin leads to more sin and problems lead to more problems. But an individual will suffer for breaking that law, whether they know the law or not, that there's a penalty for broken law. How much should we tithe? Individuals will say, well, there's only one tithe, and it's 10%. Others say, no, tithing is done away with altogether. Others say, no, there's two tithes. Some say three. Some disagree that there's any tithes at all. Deuteronomy chapter 14. Deuteronomy chapter 14 and in verse 22. Deuteronomy 14 and verse 22. He tells us very clearly, you shall tithe of all the increase of your seed that the field brings forth year by year. And some might look at that and go, see, it's an agricultural community. You tithe of the increase of your seed. Well, I don't have seed, so, well, do you have seed money? Do you have increase? Tithe of all the increase. Now, the word increase is a word that literally means what you produce or what you gain. You shall tithe of all that you produce, all that you gain. For many, that has become confusing over the years. Some think, well, you tithe on everything. Any money that comes your direction, you tithe on it. Anything that happens or anything that you receive from someone, you have to give 10%. And it becomes confusing. Again, the difference between gain and increase. He said you tithe on the increase. Not just you tithe on everything, but you tithe on your increase. Leviticus chapter 27 and verse 30. Leviticus chapter 27 and verse 30. He says, and of all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or the fruit of the tree, it is the Lord's and it is holy to the Lord. So he said, whether it's the seed of the land or it's the fruit of the tree. So now it's expanded into orchards. So you have agriculture, farmers, and you have orchards. But it's talking about all of it. He said, whether any of the tithe of the land, it is God's and it is holy unto the Lord. When you have that perspective and you realize this money is not my money, this is God's, and you pay the tithe first, you get the first tithe sent off. This comes out before anything else because it doesn't even belong to me. It's God's. Some individuals look at it as, well, this is mine. How much can I afford to give to God? Can't afford not to give 10% because that's what he requires. So he said, it is mine. It is holy to the Lord. And we have to look at tithes as something that is holy. They are set apart. The word tithe is from the Hebrew word that's translated tenth part. And so tithe is a tenth part, 10%. So it's one-tenth. In an agricultural community, one-tenth of the increase was what was left after the cost of providing a crop. They use this analogy in Bakersfield. You have your cost of seed, you have your cost of labor, of planting, you have the cost of labor of harvesting. But if you have a year, you make $1,000. If you just paid 10% of that $1,000, it may not necessarily be a tithe of your increase. Because if you have the cost of seed and the cost of doing paying your employees, the cost of putting into the field, there are going to be things that come out of that. And more likely, it's only going to be about $800 out of that $1,000 that is actually increase. If you tithe on $1,000 and the next year you use $200 of that to invest to make more money, you've already tithed on that 200, and then if you do that same process, you're tithing on money you've tithed on over and over. You're to tithe on increase. What has increased? If you spent 200 and you made 1,000, your increase is $800. So you would tithe on increase. Today, we have salary, hourly, we have commission. Our pay is a different structure, but a tithe on a tenth of our increase, and it's after our expenses, after those things that the what we call cost of doing business. This came into play, and I understood it much, much more when I bought my first business in California, and I realized, oh, wow, it's got a good income. Income and increase are different. My goal when I bought this business in California, I had a business that had been going for 4 years, and I came out here and saw the potential in the business. I thought, this business has so much more potential than what this individual, the franchisor, had or franchisee had gotten out of it. And so I thought, I'm going to buy this business. And my goal was to double it in a year. And it actually took 12 and a half months. It took two extra weeks, but I doubled what that franchise was bringing in. Now I had employees, and I had the cost of all the new product, but I had increased that business and I had doubled it. So I also had an accountant, and at the end of the year, my accountant said, here's your profit and loss statement. And I'm looking at it and I go, oh, that's not what I expected. I said, that's not very much at all. I said, that's less than what the business was bringing in from the individual who bought it, far less. And he said, a lot of this is your cost of doing business. There's a lot of business expenses. You have all these other things. You've invested so much in this first year of growing the business. He said, next year, you're not going to have so much of that investment cost. You're going to see more increase over the years. But he said, you've reinvested so much this first year that your increase looks small. I said, yeah, it looks small. I was surprised. But I learned from that principle that increase and income are not the same thing. Now, the business had an income, but that wasn't my personal income or increase. My increase was much smaller than what the business stated. So here, when we see that with somebody who is self-employed, they would pay tithes on their annual profit. Not necessarily everything the business brings in, but the profit or the increase for their business. I remember reading from articles from Mr. Armstrong, and one was dated 1982, concerning European countries and other nations where taxes took up a greater portion of an individual's income. And that is still the case. European nations, Australia, in 2009 went to Australia, and we had been there when wife and I first got married, almost 30 years ago, and it was expensive then. Back in 2009, when we took our children over there, there's a lot of taxation and there's a lot of inflation. Now, we went over there thinking, oh, everything is ridiculously expensive. And it was. A can of Pringles, $7. Here you find it 99 cents or $1.29, $7 a can. A six-pack of beer was like $20, and I was like, wow. But the average construction worker, just a basic laborer, they said, well, the average construction worker, if you go into a basic labor, you're going to make $25 to $35 an hour. I was like, oh, wow. But then you figure, okay, the cost of inflation, the cost of living there, it still balances out. Now, I figured out why Australians like to come and visit the U.S. is because they come over here and everything's lower priced, and they're like, my money goes further, and they can spend 2 or 3 weeks on vacation. But the cost of doing business, the cost of living in Australia was high. An individual said, yes, nearly half of our income is gone right off the top. And so the cost of doing business in other countries, Mr. Armstrong realized that and realized that the tie should be based on actual increase after the cost of doing business, which, depending on where you live, is different. Even in the United States, the cost of living is quite different. Now, speaking of the Jones this morning, the cost of living in Dallas is much different than here. A lot of things are less. I was back there visiting for K camp director meetings, of feast coordinator meetings, the gas was $1.90 a gallon, $1.98 a gallon. Food isn't less expensive. But one thing that's not less expensive is property tax. And I found out even though houses may cost half what they do in California, the property tax is more in Texas than it is here. I was like, wow, that is a big property tax. But they don't have state income tax either. So there's different variations to where you live, even in the United States. What is going to affect how much money you make in your actual income? So there's things that come into play and factors we have to take into account. When we pay tithe on increase, we pay on our tithes on the net that comes out after taxes. Now, not after Social Security tax, but after our income taxes. Now, if we get a tax refund, we get a refund after the end of the year, that becomes part of our increase because we didn't have that before and it's given to us and we would pay tithe on it. Now, notice at the end of verse 30 here, it says, it is holy to the Lord. It is God's money. And again, we can't do away with what belongs to God, what God says is holy. And the tithes, and there is more than one, are referred to as being holy. Leviticus 27 verse 32 says, concerning the tithe of the herd and of the flock and whatever passes under the rod, a tenth shall be holy to the Lord. So now, not only is it agriculture and fruit trees, but also cattle, animals. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says, this alludes to the mode of taking the tithe of cattle, which were made to pass under a single narrow gateway, and a person with a rod dipped in ochre stood counting them and marked the back of every tenth beast, whether male or female, sound or unsound. So they would all go through a chute, and every tenth one was marked, 10% going to God. When we think about where we tithe now, we know that Abram tithed to Melchizedek, which was the high priest. Who do we tithe to? Tithing was established as a covenant relationship, or part of that covenant relationship between God and Israel. And tithes were given to the tribe of Levi. Leviticus chapter 18 and verse 21. Leviticus 18 and verse 21. He said, and behold, I have given the children of Israel, or the children of Levi, rather, all the tenth of Israel for an inheritance, for their service which they serve, even the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. He said, their job and their calling in life, what they're going to do is serve in the tabernacle. And he said, all of the tithe of the children of Israel is going to be given to them for their service. Well, we don't have the tabernacle today. We don't have the tent. We don't have tabernacle building physically. So who are the servants of the spiritual temple today? Well, the church and the ministry are still continuing to do that work. And the church fills in, and we will see that even in the New Testament, is where the tithes are to go. Numbers 18, verse 25. Numbers 18. And in verse 25, and this will answer a question that sometimes comes up as well. Numbers 18:25 says, the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, thus speak to the Levites, and say to them, when you take of the children of Israel the tithes which I have given to you from them for your inheritance, you shall offer up a heave offering for it to the Lord, even a tenth part of the tithe. The Levites themselves were to give a tenth part of their tithe, because that was their increase. Some ask today, does the ministry have to tithe? We have an increase. We have an income. We tithe. We receive, get a direct deposit, but it goes into the bank. It is increase. And yes, we tithe on it. The tithing principle doesn't change. It's not, the ministry doesn't have to tithe. We tithe on our increase as well. And its obvious implication is Jesus Christ, that Jesus Christ has replaced Aaron as the high priest, even though he was the example of Melchizedek. But the ministers also have replaced the Levites in a similar manner, doing the service of the church and doing the work. Let's go to Malachi chapter 3. It's difficult to have a sermon on tithing without turning to the book of Malachi, because it does very clearly lay out this tithing principle. Malachi chapter 3 and verse 7. Even from the days of your fathers, you are gone away from the ordinances and have not kept them. He said, I gave you laws, I gave you ordinances, you are not keeping them. Return unto me, and I will return to you, says the Lord of hosts. But you said, wherein shall we return? Notice, as before he gets into the law of tithing, he says, you have not followed the ordinances, you haven't kept them, return to me. This isn't just about come back and give me your money. This is return to me and I will return to you. Do what is right and build this relationship, and I will build this relationship with you. Young's literal translation, where it says, wherein shall we return? Or how do we return? Young's literal translation says, in what do we turn back? You're telling us to turn back. Turn back to what? What have we done wrong? He says in verse 8, will a man rob God? God says that all things belong to him. If you don't pay 10% of your increase, you're robbing God. It's his. And that's where God says we have to pay it. So he said, you have robbed me. And they say, well, in what way have we robbed you? And he said, in your tithes and offerings. You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even the whole nation. Then he says, bring all the tithes into the storehouse or the treasuries, that there may be meat in my house. Today, where is God's house? 1 Timothy 3:15 says, the house of God is the church of the living God. There was God's house at that time because he dwelt in the tabernacle, in the Holy of Holies. But Timothy says, the house of God is the church of the living God. So he says, bring back the tithes into the storehouse or the treasuries, that there may be meat in my house. Prove me now herewith, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing that there's not room enough to receive it. That's a promise. But he says, prove me. Or, as some translations say, test. Test me. Have you ever proved God? And is it wrong to prove God? Is it wrong to say, you have stated this and I have followed what you said, prove yourself to me? Now, we see individuals doing that in the past, and today we don't say, well, if I want to know whether it's right or wrong, so I'm going to throw out a lamb's fleece. If it's wet, it's going to be the answer. If it's dry, it's going to be the answer. That's testing and proving God. But he says here, according to tithes, prove me. He says, test me. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown puts it, test me whether I will keep my promise of blessing you on the condition of you doing your part. And I like the way that's laid out. Test me whether I'll keep my promise of you doing your part, or on the condition of you doing your part. I have personally tested God, especially as a young person, you know, first starting out and trying to build a home and build the finances, and you have tithes come up. First, second, third tithe. And I thought, boy, that's a lot of money. But paid it, unquestioningly. And you learn over time that you don't have to question. But ask God, I have done what you said. Please fulfill what you have said. Because there's not a lot left after that. And God did. The prayers were answered, and many times it doesn't work out on paper. And being a numbers person and loving business and sales, I would always try to calculate, well, where did it all come from? How did ends meet when I knew for a fact by the numbers they weren't going to meet? And I couldn't figure it out. And I thought, you know what? This is one of those things I don't need to figure it out. God said it's going to happen. He says in Matthew 6, if you seek him first and his righteousness, all the things you need are going to be provided. He doesn't say, I'm going to dump so much money on you that you won't be able to pick it all up. Similar to what happened this week. I don't know if you saw on the news. An armored truck was going down the highway and money started blowing out of the armored truck all over the interstate, and cars were stopping and people were jumping out of their cars grabbing $100 bills. that's not God pouring out a blessing on you that there's not room enough to receive it. Being the Christmas season and where everybody said, oh, you know, it's, you know, the good attitudes and all this, the news said, it is a responsible thing to do that if you picked up money that doesn't belong to you, we're hoping that people will return it. From the eyes of those who were picking up the money on the interstate, I don't think they had intentions of returning it. They were elated and running through the street picking up as much money as they could. But he says here that he wants us to develop this, and he wants us to test him and prove him. And again, God will come through. All right, second tithe. Is second tithe as important as the first tithe? It's like asking, is the first commandment, or is the sixth commandment as important as the first commandment? It's a command. It's part of the laws of God, and it is just as important. It is a command. It's not the second tithe is optional. As long as you do the first, you're doing great. Second tithe, that's optional. Depends on if you can do it or not. No, the second tithe is just as important. We saw the first tithe was to go to the Levites and to the work of the church. And it says for them, because they're doing the service of the church. None of it was to be consumed by the tithe giver. All of it was to be given to the tabernacle, to the treasury. Second tithe is spelled out very clearly in a different way. Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 22. Deuteronomy chapter 14, and verse 22. He says, you shall truly tithe of the increase of your seed, of the field that brings forth year by year. Now, that seems very similar to the first. And some will say there's only one tithe and all of it is talking about the same tithe. But the first tithe that says you're not to eat of it, says you are to give it to the Levites, the tribe of Levi. This one says, and you shall eat it before the Lord your God in the place which he shall choose to place his name there, the tithe of the corn, the wine, of the oil, the firstlings of the herds and of the flocks. He said, this one you eat. Now God commands us to keep it, and some look at it as, well, if I'm going to be spending it on myself, it's up to me whether I pay it or not. No, the command to keep that tithe, God put in force so that you are able to follow the other commands of being at the holy days. But he says, now that you follow that command, I want to bless you and I want you to rejoice at my festivals. So the second tithe is not just done on part of our increase as our job. God says, I want you to do this so that you learn to fear the Lord your God always. It's also part of a relationship that we learn to fear God. We learn to have a proper reverence towards God. And there are lessons from tithing, just like there's lessons from keeping the holy days. We learn from it. We grow in it. And we grow in a deeper understanding of not just the tithing principle, but in our relationship. Verse 24, he says, if the way be too long for you so that you're not able to carry it, or if the place be too far from the Lord your God, where he shall choose to set his name there when the Lord God has blessed you, then you shall turn it into money and bind up the money in your hand, and you shall go to the place which the Lord your God shall choose. And you shall bestow that money on whatever your soul desires, oxen, sheep, wine, strong drink, whatever your soul desires, and you shall eat it there before the Lord your God. And you shall rejoice, you and your house. So he says, this tithe, you are to eat it there in a particular place. And he says, you eat it there before the Lord your God. It's a different tithe. And he said, you shall eat of the tithe, the corn, the wine, the oil, and the firstlings there at the place God chooses. Now, verse 23, it says, you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place which you shall choose to place his name there. This word, before. You shall eat before the Lord your God. The word before here means in front of or face to face. He says, I want you there. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be dwelling at my holy days. I'm going to be dwelling at the Feast of Tabernacles, and I want to see you face to face. If we don't keep our tithe, we don't save the second tithe like we should, we may not likely be able to be there. But God says, I want you before me. I want you in my presence, face to face. And again, it's a relationship. Deuteronomy chapter 16 and verse 13. Deuteronomy 16 and verse 13. He says, you shall observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days after you have gathered the corn and the wine, and you shall rejoice in the feast, you and your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow that are within your gates. I spoke about this at the feast, what within your gates means. Within your ability to control. You can't go to your neighbor and say, you have to keep the feast. You don't have any control over your neighbor, and they're not within your gates. But everyone within your gates, within your power and control. Verse 15, 7 days you shall keep a solemn feast to the Lord in the place which the Lord God shall choose, because the Lord God shall bless you in your increase. He said, I want you to set aside 10% of your increase, but I'm going to bless your increase as well. And in all the works of your hands, therefore you shall surely rejoice. It is to be used to keep the feast. And God says, you are to rejoice. And as we prepare for another year, it guarantees that we're going to be there. Because if you save 10% of your income, it doesn't matter what part of the country you live in and what feast site you go to. 10% of your income, if you're surviving here and you have an income here, 10% will allow you to be at the feast for 10 days. So he says, it is to set us apart. Now, we just had the feast coordinator meetings. We plan out the next year. We talk about years in advance where we plan to go, what type of facilities we're using. We lay it out. But it's also the time for you as we prepare for the next year, as one feast has ended, and we are preparing and setting that tithe aside for the next year, to be planning and thinking about and setting aside that tithe and not touching it. Just as he said, when you turn it into money, you bind it in your hand. You don't let it go. You don't use it until you're at the place where he says, now you're at my presence. You're before me, and I want you to consume it. All right, third tithe. What is third tithe used for? How often is it paid? Who is it paid to or consumed by? And the question, does the church believe in the third tithe? Now, that comes up, and individuals say, you know, I don't think the church believes, or I don't hear the third tithe taught any longer. Does the church believe in the third tithe? And yes, the church firmly believes in third tithe. There's a way that third tithe is administered, the way it was administered in the past as well. Deuteronomy 14 and verse 28. Deuteronomy 14 and verse 28. It says, at the end of 3 years, you shall bring forth all of the tithe of your increase that same year and lay it up within your gates. Now, the first tithe was given to the Levites, or comparably to the church. Second tithe is for you to keep the festivals. Third tithe, it is also clear what is used for. It says you are to use it within your gates. Verse 29 says, and the Levite, because he has no part or inheritance with you, the stranger, the fatherless, the widow that are within your gates, shall come and shall eat and be satisfied, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hand which you do. Now, when we're keeping the feast with the second tithe, God says, use that second tithe for all those who are within your gates. But he says, every third year, you set it aside and you use it for this particular purpose as well. He wants to bless us for something that we should be doing already, and that's taking care of the widows, the orphans, and those who are in need. So the tithe was not saved every year. It was not used by the Levites in the temple for festival worship, or wasn't used by people when they went to keep the festivals. It was used for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. Now, it doesn't just say it's only for those in your particular organization, or it's only for those in the church. In the past, there have been those who are elderly who were in need. And I remember years ago, when I was a part of the Worldwide Church of God, my grandmother, who I found out that my great-grandmother used to read the literature, and my grandmother remembered that. My grandmother really never was a part of the church, although she attended for a little while. But after my grandfather died, she lived to be 95. When she was about 80s, late 80s to early 90s, she was in assisted living, and she was still doing very well. But she was running out of finances by the time she was in her early 90s. So I asked, well, you know, would that be a third tithe recipient? And I remember a pastor making it very clear. Oh yeah, she's elderly, she's widowed, she's in need. That would be someone you could give assistance to. So I gave assistance there, and I also gave some locally in the congregation. And it was nice to see where that money was going. And it was pointed out to me then, there's no scriptural law that says you send it in. Now we do that because we don't know where all the needs are. And sometimes even in a local congregation, we don't know where those needs are. But it says it is to be used within your gates, within the ability to be able to use that for individuals in need. Now, we understand the third tithe, as it's applied today, is set up for the same uses. It's set up to take care of those who are in need. Deuteronomy 26 and verse 12 says, when you've made an end of tithing of all the tithes, plural, more than one, of the increase in the third year, which is the year of tithing, and you have given it to the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that they may eat within your gate and be filled. Excuse me. I wondered if I spoke in Bakersfield if I'd be able to get through one here. Trying. He says, then you shall say before the Lord your God, I have brought away the hallowed things. Even the third tithe was considered hallowed things. He said, I brought away the hallowed things out of my house, and I have given them to the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, according to all the commandments which you have commanded me, and I have not transgressed your commandments, neither have I forgotten them. We see that third tithe is holy, but it's also a commandment. He said, I've done these commandments that you have commanded. So third tithe was to be paid every third year, every third and sixth year of a seven-year land rest. So the third year, the sixth year, tithes would be paid. The seventh year, it was a year of release, a year of letting the land cycle rest, and there would be no increase. Today, third tithe is administered much differently. We don't have a lot of landowners. We don't have individuals following the land process, but the tithe, nonetheless, is still required. Notice the member's letter from June of 2018 of this past year. We handle third tithe differently from the way we did 30 years ago, but we still believe in a third tithe. We still understand that there is a third tithe that has to be prepared, taken care of, and ready for those who are in need. I want to talk about what the church has taught for many years, that in a society of this age, some of the nations and governments have established mandatory taxes and mandatory uses for income that is used for social welfare for those who are needy. That's what third tithe is used for, or Social Security tax is used for as well, is for the needy. So when individuals come and they say, I need third tithe assistance, the first place we go is we say, okay, everybody's been paying into the government for years. Let's see what the government has to offer. And there's all kinds of government subsidies, government help, government programs that can sometimes be even more than what a person needed to get through or to get by. And sometimes the government says no, 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 and no. And you find out, okay, they're not going to give any assistance, and this person still needs assistance. The church has funds set aside to take care of those individuals. The question becomes, then, should we pay tithe to the government yearly in a Social Security tax to be used for the poor, and then also every 3 years pay an additional tithe that's used for the same purpose? Well, we realize that in the past, individuals, and sometimes individuals today, still insist, well, I want to pay tithe every third and sixth year, with the seventh year as being a rest. And there's nothing wrong with that. Now, that is a choice. But as the biblical third tithe was designed to do in taking care of the elderly, the poor, and the widows, that's what Social Security tax is taken out to do. And it is greater than that third tithe. Its members are not expected to pay what amounts to an additional 10% every third and sixth year. There will be those who are in need and continue to be in need. And again, the church has a way of providing for that. We have an assistance fund. We have a third tithe fund. Some are not able to contribute extra to that fund, and some are. I mentioned in Bakersfield, it's like after the around the first 10 to 20 years of being in the church and hearing that phrase, if you have excess second tithe, and I was like, us growing up, what do you mean excess second tithe? We're lucky we've got the tithe we need to go to the feast. Excess second tithe. And then there's years of plenty where you realize, okay, now I've got more than I need. That is, I understand now, excess second tithe. Do we believe that if we tithe that God is going to prove what he says, including this third tithe? And again, when we understand that the taxation, the way things are taxed today, if the government were to take out less taxes for the poor and needy and not meet a tenth of our income every third year, then we would pay more. So if the government did not take out more than, or yeah, if they didn't take out more than, or less than 3.5% a year for 3 years, we would pay more. I don't know about many of you, but I've never seen the government take out 3.5% for Social Security tax. When you're self-employed, it's even higher. I remember as an employee or receiving commission, it was 15 to 18% that they would take out in Social Security. When I was self-employed, it was 25 to 27% that was taken out in Social Security. But it was more than 3%. It was, if you take out 15% a year for 3 years, that's 45% of your income over 3 years instead of 10% of 1 year. So we realize that there are taxes and things that are set aside. So if the government took out less, then we would need to pay the remainder of that. And for the United States, it meets more than a tenth of every third year. So there's no need to pay an additional on that unless we have the blessing and the opportunity to serve and to give additional. Many times we don't realize how much we can afford, and when we start following the laws of God, God makes it very clear that he will provide and he will take care of us. I remember one of my third tithe years, and it was after I graduated Ambassador College, and I came back to a local area, and I got a sales job. And it was also a third tithe year. Well, I didn't hesitate to pay first, second, and third tithe. And again, as a young person, I thought, well, that's a lot of money, but it's commanded. During that third year, I was blessed with a higher paying job. Not just higher paying, but it was twice the job I had. So here I'm paying 10% of the money I was making, but then ended up making twice as much money. I bought my first brand new vehicle, not just a vehicle and new to me, but it was the first new one. And that was something exciting, and that was in a third tithe year. And of course, physical and spiritual blessings that come in. When God says he will open up the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing that there's not room enough to receive it, he doesn't say, I'm going to dump money on the freeway out of a armored car and you're going to pick it up and you're going to have everything you need. We realize that blessings come in different ways, and we have to remember blessings are not always financial. Just as the seasons of our life, and as a Christian, we have years where we say, I just don't feel like I've grown a lot this year. And other years you go, I learned a lot of hard lessons this year, and I feel like I have grown so much. There are years that we have financial blessings, and there's years that we struggle. There's years we have blessings of health, of wisdom, education, spiritual growth, friendships or relationships that have been built, and blessings that are poured out. And whether it's first, second, or third tithe, God says he will bless us for giving it, for following those rules. So God said he will prove himself when it comes to the command of tithing. He says, when a man sows, that he will also reap. You have a choice. God says, all of it belongs to me. I require a tenth back. That is a choice. But we have to choose what we're going to sow. Are we going to keep the laws of God and reap blessings, or are we going to fail to tithe and be accused of stealing or robbing from God and have to return to build up that relationship again? He says, bring all the tithes into my storehouse that there may be food in my house. Try me or prove me, now with this, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open up to you the windows of heaven and pour out such a blessing, he says, that there's not room enough to receive it.